Are you interested in writing a musical about what happened in Gander, Newfoundland on 9/11? Most people would be like, that's not interesting. And then to turn it into what it is amazing.
Oh, absolutely. The way I am so happy during that number.
I am obsessed with this show.
Let me live, Tara.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we are finally talking about Come From Away. This, I feel, has been long awaited. We didn't want to do an episode in previous years of the podcast, if you can believe we're coming up on 3 years of this podcast, because we wanted to see it again, because the last time I had seen it was 2016, and the last time you saw it was
2018.
Yeah, so we wanted to see it again, and then obviously pandemic happened and we had decided very early on, I feel, that as soon as theater reopened, the first show that we wanted to see was Come From Away. Although not the first show that we saw, because we got lucky to see, you know, a couple shows at Shawfest, and I was at Mervish like a couple days prior to that. So, but this was the one that we were like, we are buying tickets, we are going to reopening night, and we are welcoming the show back to the Rock, as the buttons that we received
says.
Welcome
back to the Rock. Welcome back to the Rock. So yeah, I just very, when we were thinking about going back to seeing theater, it was like, what I want to see is this show, which is about community coming together, that is just a feel-good show. It is obviously about a really devastating time, but it is such like a hopeful, happy show. So I was like, oh, we need to be back. I want to be there first night. I want to be there screaming for the cast on the first night that we can. And so we did it.
In the second row. Now, I will say, we are recording this episode the day after we saw the show, but very close to episode release. And sadly, as everybody knows what's going on, like in the news of the world, you know, there's a new variant for COVID, and sadly, theaters are going back into 50% capacity. So to be there last night at full capacity, which is like, they only are doing that for like maybe three performances here for now. The theater was like electric in there. Like we opened to a standing ovation and immediately burst into tears.
It was the amount I cried watching this
for literally like 100 minutes straight, basically.
Like they came out and they took their like, you know, like the little drums going, like dinna 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 dinna, and then they like walk out during it, and they're sitting there, and the audience just could not contain itself, just like leapt to their feet, was like screaming, clapping, because it was like an applause like for them being there after a year and a half, but also like, can you believe we're here after a year and a half? A full theater.
Yeah. And it was also like us obviously applauding the cast, but then yeah, as you said, like the cast applauding us, you know, there was cameras in the theaters taking photos. It was just like a very like lovely welcome back to the Rock. So that being said, theaters are going back to 50% capacity.
In Ontario.
If you do have tickets to Come From Away, like obviously check with Mervish, because at time of recording, again, this might change on Monday when this episode is released, but you cannot buy tickets to Come From Away or Jesus Christ Superstar right now. I assume it's because they are working on their website to figure out the 50% capacity. I know for Jesus Christ Superstar, it's a bit different because obviously subscription is involved, so they have to deal with all of that. Come From Away is not subscription-based. So hopefully everything will be back up and running. And I think we said this on our previous episode. You know, like theater is one of the safest things to go to in a pandemic. You know, the cast is tested regularly. And if you can, go and see your local theater, because
we were double masked.
Alive.
Yeah, we were double masked last night.
I never once felt like it was people weren't being respectful, that it was overwhelming. Like everyone was super respectful. And I do think that that's a bit of a Canadian thing.
Sure.
But it was really great to see that everyone was wearing their masks.
Just to speak to Mervish, which is like what we have the experience with, they're not selling concessions or drinks or anything. So no one's taking their mask off to eat. So everyone is masked the whole time. Plus, Come From Away specifically has no intermission where...
And Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah. Don't have an intermission, which I feel like is the danger zone of when people are probably talking, moving,
going to the lounge, having
exactly.
a drink. Yeah.
Exactly. You're just kind of next to the same people the entire time.
Yeah.
With everyone's masks fully on. I did not see a single person without their mask on or even wearing it improperly. So... Yeah. I hope that continues, even and, down to 50% capacity.
And even just to go back to before you enter the theater, you know, they are checking vaccines. You do need to have your ID ready before you get there. So, again, I know that we talked about this on a recent episode about Shawfest doing it right. Like, Mervish also, like, I really think that both times I had been there in the last week, I felt very safe. So, I hope that everything continues to be fine for 50% capacity. And, again, like, if you can and you feel comfortable, like, going into a theater, like, go support local theater. That being said, let's talk about the show. So, the reason, as I said, that we had refrained from talking about Come From Away is because my memory of it wasn't that great. And I think I've said this maybe on a previous episode. We've definitely talked about this. We talked about it in our opening numbers episode because we'll get to it, but that opening number is everything. But this is not a cast recording I listen to because this musical is 100% sung through. So it is difficult, I find, to just like pick a song and listen to it because you sort of need to go in order to hear the entire story.
And very much each song goes straight into the next one. Something that is so, I think, very unique about this show is that they really give the audience no time to applaud. There is no breaks. They just go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. Like, you know, their big kind of 11 o'clock Me in the Sky. Normally, after a solo like that, the audience would applaud, cheer. But no, we're going straight into a scene. We're going straight into that character doing something else. So the audience doesn't have that time to applaud. So... No song, I think, really feels like it ends when you're listening to this cast recording.
Only the opening number, Welcome to the Rock, because there's
you applaud after that.
And then also the finale, which is basically the same song.
Sure. And I also think we applauded last night after, in the bar, Heave Away, after people were screeched in. Like, because the band comes out there, you get to applaud there. So, like, really, like, three applause moments.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Which is... As you said, it is such a unique way to do a show, but I also think it's a smart way to do that because sometimes applause can, like, break the moment, and there's no chance to break a moment. And because the subject matter is at times heavy, at times it's very light, I think it's a smart approach to do it that way. I mean, for anyone that does not know what Come From Away is about, where have you been for the last however many years? But this is a Canadian musical written by Irene Sankoff and David Hine. And it is about what happens in Gander, Newfoundland on 9/11 and after. They actually call this a 9/12 musical, which I love. I think it's such a smart way to talk about this show. And I've said this before, but the first time that I saw this show in 2016, I liked it. I didn't love it. And I just think that, you know, like, I had worked a very early morning shift and I wasn't 100% in it, and there was no, like, intermission. So it's just, like, a lot to take in 100 minutes. But after seeing the pro shot, which... If anyone does not have Come From Away in a city that you're listening to this podcast in, go on to Apple TV and watch the pro shot because it is mostly the original cast and it is fantastic. That's really when I sort of like re-fell in love with this musical. And then just seeing it last night, it's just like a well-oiled machine. It's been here for so long. It's basically a staple in Canada, and I don't know that it's going to leave anytime soon. And to just tell... I want to say, like, the good side of such a horrific day is it meant something in 2016 when it first came out, but I think it means even more now while we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Absolutely. It is about, like, a community stepping up and doing something for these people that they don't know, like, acting with the best interests of these absolute strangers at heart. And I think that's something that really does apply to right now. Every single person right now, what they're doing with their behavior, their actions, their choices is impacting everyone around them. And you know, we see in Come From Away that the citizens of Gander, of Newfoundland, like, opened their, with no question, just opened their town, their community, their homes, with no expectation of anything back to mm-hmm. protect these strangers. And I, you know, it really, it's almost too relevant. It's almost
It's too real right now.
It's too real.
There's a song, I'm trying to see, I think it's Blankets and Bedding or 28 Hours Wherever We Are, mm-hmm. but it's when everyone, it's not 28 Hours, maybe it's the song after that, it's when everyone gets off of the plane and they are finally in the cafeteria and see the TVs and they're watching the news and watching that live play out in front of you and them singing the lyrics like I just can't watch the news anymore is very relevant to almost the last 2 years.
Yes. You know, another like a joke that's in there that's always been in there is the toilet paper where they're like
the paper towel and the toilet paper. There's just
like,
too much.
Like stop bringing toilet paper, we have too much toilet paper. And it's like, wow, what a throwback to 1.5 years ago where you just could not find a roll of toilet paper.
Yeah, it's true. Crazy. What a time to think back, like to think back to the early days of 2020 and also to think back to what's currently happening on the news of how it's like kind of feeling like we're back to where we were. And then seeing this mm-hmm. was kind of like a lot. It was a lot of like overwhelming emotions. My question for you, I don't know if we've mm-hmm. ever discussed this, but like, did you know what happened in Gander prior?
I did not know what happened in Gander before I knew about the musical.
Yeah, me so
either. You know, as a fan of musical theater, always keeping up with what's going on. But I'm not a Mervish subscriber. I, you know, buy my tickets one off. And when Come From Away came to Toronto, which was one of its, or maybe its last pre-Broadway stop, I didn't get to see it. I waited in like a rush line one day to try and get tickets, but it was an absolutely massive rush line and did not get a ticket, so I missed it that time. But that was kind of when I was made aware of what it was and knew about the storyline of it. And I think I'd seen, maybe once it went to Broadway, I'd seen a bit of the documentary that was on HBO. Mm-hmm. But no, I did not know about what happened in Gander on September 11th until this musical came out.
Yeah, me too. I mean, at the time, like 9/11, I was 7. And yeah. Barely knew what was going on then. I mean, since obviously we've been to New York many times, gone down to Ground Zero many times. But I was always nervous about how this musical would hit in New York because the top of it is like quite Canadian. You know, we're talking Tim Hortons, we're talking Rogers TV, RIP, they're gone. I mean, hockey is everywhere, but there are just like
Shoppers. Shoppers is such like a random specific reference.
I know.
Like, I don't think of Shoppers as like extremely Canadian, but I guess they are. Shoppers for American listeners is our CVS. Like our biggest pharmacy chain.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know if that's helpful to people, but
yeah, I would say it's like it's the equivalent to a CVS in the States. Yeah. Yeah, that's the, which if you even change the lyrics, like. I mean, they didn't for the Americans, but...
No, because
it's just that's so what
was there. Shoppers was there. Shoppers yeah. was the pharmacy.
But yeah, I was worried that this musical wouldn't hit the same way that obviously when it came out here, like rave reviews, but it wasn't just like this came out of nowhere. This was workshopped in 2012, first produced at Sheridan, and then 2013. They did La Jolla. They did a run in Seattle in 2015. They did like a concert in Gander at one point. And then there was a run in Washington. Then it opened in Toronto. And then it opened on Broadway, still on Broadway. And since then, it's currently in the West End. I believe it's also in Australia. I think they're trying to get it into like Singapore. Don't quote me.
For some reason, China is ringing a bell right now.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
They're trying to get it internationally, everywhere, just because I think this, like, universal good feel story is what everyone craves right now. But yeah, mm-hmm. my worry was that it wouldn't hit in America. But I think something that we discussed yesterday was there are parts for us of this that it's like, oh, this is so Canadian. This is so wholesome. But on the flip mm-hmm. side, I'd be so interested to sit in a theater with Americans for those moments of, you know, like when Bush is talking, when they talk about mm-hmm. like certain aspects of 9/11, when they talk about certain aspects of being in New York, when the plane lands in Dallas. Like, I can only imagine what some American people must feel during those specific moments that like we don't feel the same way because we can't relate to that.
Yes, like the specific moment when they're flying back and Beverly Bass is like on the intercom and she's like, welcome back to the U.S. And in a Canadian audience, everyone's just like, great. Like, I don't know what it's like. We've never, like, I've only ever seen it in Canada. So I don't know what it's like to watch it in the United States and to, like, experience maybe the relief or the catharsis or the excitement of that moment there.
Yeah. No,
I don't know.
So
someone
true.
Tell us, is it different? Did people cheer at that line?
Yeah. And then, like, on the flip side, like, what's it like in the UK and Australia? Because at that point, you're just watching a feel-good story. And I hope that they get the references that go out there. Although, I will say, Canadian and also, like, Newfoundland and the way that they speak is, to me, very similar to, like, an Irish accent.
Yes, it is
so
very
I think
similar
it hits
to
in the UK. Yeah.
Probably. And it's also, you know, we say, okay, it takes place in Canada. It's the story of Canadian people opening up their homes. And it's about the trigger is this event that happened in the United States, in New York City. But the passengers that were stranded, that were flying that day, are from everywhere
all
in the
world.
And a lot of people know what it feels like to be on a plane and have gone through plane security now, which changed so much since this day. So it, even if it's not specifically about like your community or your home, I think it's an extremely relatable story just by the virtue that it's like regular everyday people who were stranded based on just the random flights that they happened to be taking that day.
Yeah. Speaking of the everyday people, the local people, we did literally just watch some of the CBC documentary on Come From Away. And I always thought about this from the first moment I saw it. To know that all of these characters are based either solely on one character or on one person or multiple people, to sit in an audience and watch someone portray you as an everyday hero, like, I can't even imagine what that out-of-body experience is like. And it must be so incredible the first time that they got to see this.
It's crazy. These people went through just a crazy but very ordinary experience. These were just ordinary people. And then to have this week of their life musicalized.
Yeah.
When they were experiencing it, there's no way any of them ever thought that, oh, this us being stranded in this random Canadian town is going to be turned into a hit Broadway musical one day.
Because I feel like anyone that lives in Gander thinks that anyone else in the world is like, where the hell is Gander?
Where the hell is Gander?
There's a museum. There's 9/11 museum there. I think they said that they have a piece of steel from the memorial. There's like,
yes, I think it's the only place not in the United States that has a piece of steel from the towers.
Yeah. And I mean, this year was the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And I believe if this was not a pandemic and a COVID year, that there would have probably been another celebration in Gander. You know, they met for the 10th anniversary and they call them the Come From Aways, the plane people, anybody that comes over. And to reunite with some of those people that were so like kind and generous to you, literally for just out of the goodness of their heart, like, it must be so nice to reunite after all of these years and think about that time. But it is interesting when you think about it in terms of like timeline. This takes place over what, like 4 or 5 days?
I think it's five days. They were there for 5 days.
Yeah. So pretty crazy. And then just to like go through its life on Broadway. I mean, it's still on Broadway, but it was nominated for 7 Tony Awards at the 71st Annual Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Best Original Score, Best Book, Best Featured Actress for Jen Colella, and then it won Best Direction of a Musical, Christopher Ashley won. We did talk about this, I feel, on our Dear Evan Hansen episode, but to bring it up again, should Come From Away have won Best Musical that year?
This is such a difficult question because at the time, the hit musical of that season was Dear Evan Hansen. Like, you could not have a conversation about musicals at the time without talking about Dear Evan Hansen.
No.
However, I feel like there has been, you know, a reckoning around Dear Evan Hansen, especially because the movie came out this year. So it brought it back up to everyone's attention, but also to a lot more people's attention that did not know what Dear Evan Hansen was about. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's interesting that Dear Evan Hansen played here in Toronto, and it actually took over the Royal Alex Theatre that that Come From Away was at home in.
They turned it blue.
They painted that theater blue.
They turned the most historical theater in Canada blue, and then it closed.
Yeah, it's still blue, but Come From Away blue works too.
It's the same blue.
But yeah, so they moved Come From Away out from the Royal Alex into the Winter Garden, which was, I think, like, not a huge problem, but it was like a situation because Mirvish does not own the Winter Garden. So
no.
It was a whole theater shuffle.
Although,
here.
I do think it would have been nice to see it there because it's a little bit more of an intimate setting. So it would have been nice.
But the Royal Alex is the, like, smallest.
Yes.
Well, not the it's not the CAA, but, like, of the three big theaters, the Royal Alex is the smallest.
Yeah.
And I like that theater. I like every time I'm in there, I really enjoy it. But yeah, then Dear Evan Hansen obviously closed and Come From Away moved back into the Royal Alex. But anyway, that's not the point of this conversation. So we had both of those shows playing here in Toronto at the same time, which is kind of unusual to have two best musical nominees from the same season, both in Toronto, both supposed to be long open-ended runs. That is like a very unusual situation for Toronto. So yeah, I think with retrospect, the musical that has held up better is definitely Come From Away. But the thing about awards is that you don't award them in retrospect. You award them in the time. You do. Like, that's just...
We could go back and reverse many awards if we wanted
to. We don't go, like, 10 years ago being like, what should have won the Oscar in 2011? Like, you don't. You award it in that year. Which is kind of crazy. But, so I can't say it was wrong, but I do think the musical that has held up better is obviously Come From Away.
Also so interesting that we're talking about this now because, I mean, we're not going to get into this. We will get into this on our Year in Review episode. But someone else was nominated in the 2017 Tony Awards. Not from Dear Evan Hansen. He's in Dear Evan Hansen and was the star of West Side Story. Mike Feist.
Oh, right.
Right?
Right.
So it's kind of like... There's a lot of, like, relevancy right now. But that Best Featured Actress category was also crazy at the time because it was Jen Colella. It was Rachel B. Jones for Dear Evan Hansen who won. It was Stephanie J. Blunt for Falsettos, which, like, go watch that pro shot, everyone. And then it was Mary Beth Peel from Anastasia, which I feel like they just threw her in there to throw her in there. But it was, like, at the time, I think a pretty tough competition between the three of them for sure. And there was a lot of talks of Jen Colella, but also Stephanie. And then I think Rachel Bay Jones just won it because, like, it was the year of Dear Evan Hansen. But it would have been interesting to see Jen win for this role, just in terms of how much she, like, committed her time to the project. You know, she plays real-life pilot Beverly Bass. They became, like, really good friends. And Jen, like, was in it from the very, very early days of the production and then stayed in it on Broadway for at least a couple years and returned for the pro shot. And I do think, obviously, like, everyone brings their own performance to this character, but no one sings that score like Jen Colella.
She has such a unique voice. Like, nobody sounds like her.
No, literally nobody.
No one's voice sounds like her. And you just, like, she sings one word, and you're like, that's Jen Colella.
Yeah.
Like, she's so distinct. And what she brought to Me in the Sky and the character of Beverly Bass is wonderful.
Yeah, she's a star. Actually, she's doing something. She's in Suffs, right? With, like, all of those amazing other women. I don't know. It's not going to Broadway, but it's, like, going to New York. But I'm pretty sure she's in that. She's also, like, doing, like, 54 Below shows, and she's around. But if anyone gets a chance to see her on stage, you should go because she's fantastic. And it's interesting, too, that she was nominated as featured because I think in this, it's such an ensemble piece. There are 12 people.
There's
on
no lead
stage.
Of the show.
No, she's the only one that gets like a solo, let's say. Yeah. But I think the concept in general is super interesting because everybody plays at least three other people. Some people play more, and they change by like their jackets, or sometimes there's a hat, or whatever
glasses,
it might be.
Or just moving the way you, changing the way you speak, or moving your body in a certain way. It's just a different accent.
And I was saying to you yesterday, like, what if something goes wrong? What if someone doesn't bring a prop on stage? You have to bring it on from the beginning because no one ever leaves. Like, basically, everyone is there for the entire time. And the way that they use a turntable is really smart. The way that they use chairs and props is super smart. And I just think that you really have to, when you're putting specifically this show together and you're casting this show, I think the rehearsal process is, like, super important to make sure that your cast is, like, cohesive and good so that they can all, like, trust each other and go through 100 minutes without stopping.
I want to shout out the choreographer, Kelly Devine, who, when you see the show, you're not necessarily thinking of, like, choreography. You know what I mean?
Right.
But this show is actually so choreographed because every person, like we're saying, is playing multiple people, and everyone needs to be in the exact right spot at the exact correct time in order to make the stage pictures work. The setting is just, you know, these two tables and these 12 chairs. And that's really all they use set-wise to create this world. Mm-hmm. And the choreographer took 12 people who, again, are not dancers. This is, like, very pedestrian movement. And created a world that showed the difference between people from Newfoundland and people from people who came from away, the contrast between them. And it's almost like a movement director versus a choreographer, just choreographing every single place that they're moving to highlight the moments that they want highlight, to hide the moments they want to hide, to make it look like the well-oiled machine that it is. Mm-hmm. This is a kind of choreography that is typically overlooked because it is not, you know, in your face, like leg in the air or modern dance or something. So it's, like, really amazing that they were recognized at the Tonys for the choreography of this musical, because it is kind of not the typical choreography that you would see recognized.
And on the same grain of that, I feel like the lighting is also its own piece of this musical.
Yes.
This lighting design is Howell Binkley, who we know best, I would say, for Hamilton, but I feel for the guys that are doing the follow spot, like, at the back and, like, pressing the buttons, because, again, I mean, I'm sure it's on a track at this point, because there's so many lighting cues in this show, but there are so many moments when you need to shut off the lights on everybody and bring the lights on someone specific, or, you know, when we're in the plane, the lighting is, like, dark or blue, when we're outside, and they said, like, for the 5 days in Newfoundland, like, it was full sunshine, so, you know, you get a little glare of, like, sunshine. The lights, like, follow each of the characters as if there are 12 lights with them. One of my favorite moments in this show is when it's right at the beginning. Everyone is, like, freaking out on the planes. Every cast member has a flashlight and they're shining it on themselves, and they're just, like, talking. Everyone's talking over each other of all of the, you know, concern and jumble of, like, what is happening right now. And then they turn the lights off and we go, like, back into the scene. I just think that the lighting is a character in itself. And then also on the same grain of that, let's talk about the music, because the background, the underscoring of this show is also so amazing. And that heartbeat of a drum that goes through the whole time, like, you can feel it through your body as you're sitting in the theater, and everyone is, like, tapping their foot along, you know, like, bopping their head a little bit, and you are just, like, so immersed in this production. And I just think that, like, seeing it for a second time, or seeing it after the pro shot or whatever, it's just, like, you appreciate these little things more because you already know what the storyline is.
Yes. I mean, like, talking about the music, so Sankoff and Hine, what are their other credits? Because this is really the only thing I've really heard from them.
So the other show that, like, put them on the map here was My Mother's Lesbian Jewish Wiccan Wedding. Did I get that order right?
I think you're right. My Mother's Lesbian Jewish Wiccan Wedding. Yes, you're correct.
Amazing. that is the only other show that I know of theirs.
Absolutely same. That is...
And by saying no, I just know the name. I don't know the music.
Yeah, me neither. That's kind of their other big project. And I mean, they're definitely, I'm sure, writing other things, but I haven't heard music from them from anything since either. They're a Canadian couple who live in New York to write music and musicals. And they were approached by Michael Rubinoff after seeing my mother's lesbian Jewish Wiccan wedding to write a musical about this situation that happened in Gander. This was not an I mean, it was an idea from someone, but they weren't like, oh, let's write this musical about this. They were approached specifically, and I believe went to the 10th anniversary of 9/11 in Gander to start collecting stories and interview people for mm-hmm. this musical. So it was a commission for them to do.
I mean, can't confirm this, but do you think that they were reached out to by Michael Rubinoff for the Canadian Music Theatre Project? Because it did premiere, not premiere, but it did have a showcase there as well.
Yes, I believe the first workshop was at the CMTP, and it was the first year of the CMTP. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but my guess, if I had to guess...
It all kind of lines up. Yeah. Yeah.
Would be Michael Rubinoff looking for to develop Canadian musicals, number one. Wanting to start the CMTP to be able to develop Canadian musicals. I think they both stemmed from the same like ambition that Michael Rubinoff had to want to develop Canadian musicals and to want to have a place to develop Canadian musicals. Mm-hmm. And then it was like the synergy that they both were brought together in the same moment to be able to be at the first CMTP. And now the CMTP will forever have cred because the first one spawned this, the first one they ever did.
A Broadway hit, an international
exactly.
hit. Like, yeah. And for anyone that doesn't know Michael Rubinoff, we never said, he's the dean of Sheridan College here in Toronto. Well, not really in Toronto, Toronto.
The Sheridan Theatre School.
Yeah. So, you know, like we've always said, we want to go back to Canadian Music Theatre Project whenever they have them live in person because, like, some of the stuff that's created there... It's just super interesting. And I do think that when you probably pose the question of like, hey, are you interested in writing a musical about what happened in Gander, Newfoundland on 9/11? Most people would be like, that's not interesting. And then to turn it into what it is amazing. I think there are, as we said, sung through, but there are moments of the show, the songs are so good. There are so many amazing songs. I mean, we've talked about it before, but like we cannot do an episode on Come From Away without talking about Welcome to the Rock, the opening number of this musical. That is the way that that song starts is what I was saying of like the heartbeat of the drums. That is mm-hmm. the most incredible ensemble moment. It is so powerful. And bringing that together with the choreography, it's very simple mm-hmm. movement, but the like stomping towards the audience and us being in the second row, like literally in
the
show. It was
like rumbling last night, the theater. Like, yeah. You felt them stomping on the stage. Welcome to the park, welcome to the trees, to the ocean and the sky and whatever's in between. To the ones who've left, you're never truly gone. Our candles in the window and the candles always on. When the sun is coming up and the world is coming short, if you're hoping for a harbor, then you'll find an open door. In the winter from the water, through whatever's in the way, to the ones who have come from the way. Welcome to the rock.
Yeah, but it's just such a powerful, emotional song, and there are aspects of that song that the theming is used throughout. You know, the I'm an Islander, the You Are Here, Welcome to the Rock, obviously. But one of my favorite songs, and this was, again, when I watched the pro shot that stuck out to me, is I Am Here, which is sung by Hannah, the character Hannah. She is a woman from New York. Her son was a firefighter, and we find out at the end of the musical that he did die in 9/11, and it is such an emotional moment when we hit that. But she is one of the only people, I would say, of the Come From Aways that is sort of like hesitant to participate in any of the like Newfoundland activities because all she wants to do.
One of the Kevins, but.
Yes. All she wants to do is hear from her son. And to have her although not a main solo like Me in the Sky, but to have her be able to sing that, like, such emotional, heartfelt number. I love that song. I love the instrumental of that song.
I'm telling you, listen, my son, he takes risks. He's not missing. He's helping or hurt. He'll get out of this. Yes, I keep trying. And yes, here's the number. And yes, at the Legion in Gander, I'll be right here. I should be there when it's over and done. When he comes through the door and says, I'm home, Mom. I should be there for my son, but instead I am here. I am here.
But I do think one of the show-stopping moments in the show is Screechin'.
Oh, absolutely. The way I am so happy during that number.
This scene is amazing because it comes after, like, kind of a heavy moment, and then we go into another, like, kind of heavy moment. Oh, yeah, this is what I was going to say. I, like, had this moment last night when I was watching, but after Screechin', we'll come back to Screechin' in 1 second, but we go from Screechin' directly into Me in the Sky, yeah. And anybody that plays that role, like, Screechin' is the most, like, energized. You're actually, like, really moving, really dancing, like, really jumping, and then to go and sing this, like, powerful song that is, like, belting
to, like,
at the top.
Yourself.
It's so hard. I feel so bad for everyone that has to play Beverly or Annette or any of those characters. But anyway, back to Screechin'. So it is a Newfoundland tradition that you, to become a Newfoundlander, you drink Screech, which they say is kind of like bad rum, and you kiss a cod. Never tried Screech. I have had cod. Never kissed one, but I've had cod.
I'm Googling what is Screech. It's Newfoundland Screech rum, so it is a rum, but I think it's just, like, really gross.
Probably, like, super strong, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. So they sing this song, which kind of has, like, a folksy vibe to it, but the best part of this
staging... Well, it's, like, very much inspired by the traditional music of Newfoundland, which is very much drawn from the traditional music of, like, Ireland. So it that's something that great that they did. They use so much of the style of the traditional music that people listen to and will play in bars there, not just in that moment, but in the whole show.
The best part of this scene, the band comes out from behind to participate, and
I absolutely lived.
They also lived. The drummer last night was giving everything.
Yes. So someone playing the flute in this song? Is it a flute?
It's like, it's in between, like, a piccolo, a flute, a recorder.
Okay.
It is some sort
of string. I'm reading the band. It's whistles, Irish flute, something pipes. So I believe it is the Irish flute he's playing in that moment.
It sounds more like a whistle, though, because it's kind of high pitch.
Maybe. There's
it reminds me of one of those whistles that is long and it has the, not like a trombone, but like kind of like a trombone. It makes kind of like a bird noise. That's kind of what it reminds me of. It's really tiny, the whatever
he's
playing.
Yeah, it was tiny. But he was giving me life because he was standing on a chair playing whatever instrument we've decided it was, doing the choreography. This is like the biggest choreography dance moment of the entire show.
Yeah, for sure.
they're dancing. And he's doing the choreography on the chair as a member of the band. The drummer was singing along with this song too.
Yeah, in the background, he's just like, you'll be a Newfoundlander. Like, we could see him doing it. And then the main guy, like, on guitar, who just looks so cool, he was just... Yeah. Like, dancing with the woman that was playing Beulah. Like, they were just having a blast on stage. The woman that was the violinist, she was amazing.
The fiddle.
So good. And it's interesting because, like, the instruments that they play in this, again, like, as you said, very, like, traditional, but those instruments kind of, like, transform throughout the show because no other song sounds like Screechin' in this musical. Yet they're
what
using
they call
all
it?
The same stuff.
The garbage stick, is that what they call it? The trash stick?
With the, like...
Like, it has, like, bells and, like, a bucket.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's on it. But, yeah, they call that, and, like, the musicians come out and play it. Like, they become part of the show in that moment. The first time I saw it, I, like, didn't realize what was happening. This is 2-3 years ago, almost. And I was like, why does the stage feel so full? Like, where did all these people come from? And it was the band that had joined on stage and was participating in the show.
Yeah.
And they also have, not to pick my favorite moment of the show, be the end. But after the cast has bowed, the band comes out and they play. It's a little bit on the cast recording. I feel like they played for longer last night than what's on the cast recording.
I almost think that was like, we're back, guys. Let us have our time.
Like, each person, I don't know if they do this every night. I don't remember. But each person in the band that came out, like, got to, like, solo a little bit. And we just, like, everyone was already standing and cheering and clapping along. And the musicianship is amazing. And it's, I love when the band plays. This is, like, very
the band's visit.
Like, at the end, when the band plays for an extra, like, couple minutes at the end, and they did that and like brought so much joy. So again, not for my favorite part to be when the show is over, but
you could just see they were so happy to be back. Like, it's been it's been as long as it's been for the actors, like, it's been the same amount of time for the band. We always forget about the band. Like, they are so much a part of this show as the people on stage, and they happen to be on stage for this, but no matter, like, in the pit, above, behind, like, they are just as affected. So to let them have a moment like that, especially after a shutdown, and I know it existed before, but I feel like they were really going for it yesterday.
I felt the energy last night from the band. You know what I'm thinking about right now? Our favorite show, The Heart of Robin Hood, with the band.
Wow.
This was a show, they had like an onstage band as well, but they were a real band like outside of the Heart of Robin Hood. They weren't put together for this. And they, my favorite moment of this, that show, at the beginning of Act Two, that set was a giant slide. Oh. And they slid down from the top with their instruments and started playing while they're like sliding down. Crazy, crazy.
It was like a slide that was covered in fake vines to replicate like a hill.
Yeah, it was like a amazing. Giant hill slide, and they slid from the top down. It was amazing.
There was also a pool of water.
Yeah, I
love
when you can see the band.
There was a pool of water.
There was
in that
a pool
show.
Of water in that show.
The way that we've referenced this show like at least five times on this podcast.
No one has ever heard of this show.
Me and you were the only people that ever saw it.
It was amazing though. Gabriel Ebert starred in it.
It was so good.
Tony Award winner. He's so like tall.
Yeah. This is a Heart of Robin Hood fan podcast.
But I don't
there
like
are
I
vibes.
There. Completely unrelated, but there are vibes to
there
it.
There are vibes, yeah.
I remember listening to a podcast many, many years ago. I believe it was hosted by Patrick Hines. I believe it was Theater People with Patrick Hines, where they had Sankoff and Hein on the show to interview them. And they talked about musicals that inspired Come From Away. And they said what they would do when they would go to New York is they would split up. They wouldn't see the same shows. They would see different shows. They could both like be inspired by things and see if it was worth and then talk about it after.
Oh,
and
that's so
one
smart.
Day... Right? So one day for a matinee, this was like 2012 probably, one of them went and saw Once, and the other one went and saw Peter and the Starcatcher. And then when they met up after, they're like, you gotta go see the show I just saw.
Oh my god, Steph, because they're like speaking your language here.
They are speaking my language, like two of my loves, two of my favorites. But when I think about both of those shows, I see the DNA of those shows in Come From Away. Again, Peter and Starcatcher, a 12-person cast, like no one barely leaves the stage. Everyone plays a million characters, just moving small pieces of prop, changing an accent, changing a mannerism to become different characters. Sometimes the characters are the set. So that was like very much in Come From Away. Once, the idea of the like musicians on stage, the style of music, like kind of the groundedness, the realism, the comedy from Once. Once does, like, not come across as a very funny show on the cast recording, but it's actually so funny in real life.
Comes across as the most serious thing that you will see on the cast recording.
No, hilarious. Laughed my butt off. It was so funny.
Come From Away, though. So funny.
Yes. It's about this, like, serious subject matter, but is, like, has so much comedy. And they, like, don't mind being silly with it. Like, I think about the moment where the, like... doctors from the medical conference come to like clean the toilets. They're like these like red like gloves and they're like lab coats.
Also on the plane when everyone is freaking out at the beginning and one of the Kevins like stands up and like claps in her
You're
face.
Breaking the F.
The Kevin Ali Moman
I was like, he's so funny in this.
He was so funny in this.
It's also a great character, like a great track, like that Kevin, and also the character of Ali, who is the Muslim man.
The tone that he has to switch from sometimes in like 30 seconds is crazy. Like you go from comical, like laughing about being other Kevin's sexy Terry to getting body searched at an airport. Like it's it's very impressive to see. I feel like whoever plays that series of characters has a really difficult job of capturing the tone in every scene. And I think specifically about, again, like the body search scene, but also the one of the scenes that I love is when everyone sort of like comes together and prays, and all of the different religions are shown. I love that scene. I think it's stunning. I think it's so beautiful that they get all different like languages sung in that song. But you see Ali, like we focus so much on him and his praying, and when Annette comes up to him and says, you know, we've saved a spot for you in the library, it's very quiet there. So it is super interesting. And then again, he'll like flip a switch and crack a joke in a bar. Like, it's crazy.
I think, you know, he is, the character of Ali is really the only Muslim representation we get in this musical. And that was a time, an event where Muslims were facing so much discrimination, racism, because of the events that happened, and like people, like so much confusion surrounding it. So much of that is like on that character's shoulders. So much of that experience for people is on the other characters' reactions and Ali's like reactions to the rest of the characters. And he kind of provides the glimpse into how the rest of the world was handling this event. I could do with more, but
no, I agree. I think they touch on the political side of 9/11 very, very, very briefly. I think if we added an intermission and maybe an extra half an hour, we could dive a little more.
But I don't want that either.
No, totally. So I think it's enough for us as an audience to, again, like get that glimpse and sort of understand, although we will never be able to understand. I think, again, when I watch the pro shot, the moment that stuck out to me is when they're flying back to the States and the flight attendant says, there's a Muslim on this plane. I'm not going. And then they take him for a full body search, and you hear what he says about how the lower half of his body is only seen by his wife, and to have a woman in the room is like the most traumatizing experience anyone could ever have. And to hear that, I'm sure in 2001, and I'm sure sometimes even in 2021, like people are pulled aside at an airport and have a very similar experience to that. So I do think by sharing little teeny glimpses, although not enough, there is something relatable for an audience member to be like, that person represents me. And yeah, it's a lot of responsibility for the person that plays that group of characters. But yeah, I agree. We could do with a little more of the political side.
Like we were talking about this last night, you know, looking at that cast, it is a 12-person cast. So it's very easy to like look in everyone's face. And I was counting, I was like, oh, there's 3 people of color in this cast and 9 white people in this cast. And this is a story that takes place in Newfoundland that is, especially 20 years ago, and even now, is like extremely white place. It just is. Yeah. You know, if it was in Toronto, that would be extremely jarring. Like we live close to near Toronto. It is an extremely diverse city. To have a cast that was predominantly white people would just not fly, not make sense. And so I understand the like lack of diversity in this cast, but I was also wishing that there was more, because each cast member who is not white, who is a person of color in this cast, is playing a character where that's relevant to the character that they're playing. And I wanted, like, why was no one else in the cast without consideration to their skin color, I feel. It was just, like, something that I was thinking about last night while watching the show.
Yeah. I think it's also because, again, we were second row, so we could really see
we're like all in people's faces, seeing the sweat.
I totally agree. I mean, again, we had this conversation yesterday. I do think that the New York cast, I don't know about like currently, but when they reopened, they were a little bit more diverse, I'm sure, around the world. I mean, if it's going to go all the way over to China, then it would be so interesting to see what they do there. Right. Because it's interesting when you place this show that has that is portraying different religions and ethnicities, and you do want to be like politically accurate, obviously. So to see it in a place I don't know, it'd be interesting to see it around the world, because as I said, like, you can place yourself into one of these characters very easily, and that's sort of why this story is so universal.
That was the biggest criticism that I had walking out last night. Just something that was, like, very blatant to see, especially because we're thinking more about the casting of shows and what talent pool we're pulling from. And it was a very talented cast. Like, when they were harmonizing, when they were 12 voices singing together, it was amazing. But it is one of the things.
And a full Canadian cast.
Of course. Very important.
Yes.
Very important for Come From Away.
Yeah.
When we can do a full Canadian cast in Canada, it's my favorite thing. It is my favorite thing. Employ Canadian actors.
Haven't had this since Kinky Boots, which also was obsessed with.
Kinky Boots was iconic. Kinky Boots was the moment.
Yeah.
A little bit of cast overlap in that show and this show.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, there's limited big productions in Canada that are Canadian sit-down productions. And to have Come From Away being so long-running with a little bit of a break in between. But that is kind of unusual, especially in recent years. I feel like more in the 90s they would have long-running productions, but not very much recently at all. So it's very exciting to have one and be a Canadian story.
Yeah, because those long-running productions that were here in the 90s was like The Phantom and Les Mis.
Yes.
Like the exactly. biggest productions of all time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So before we close it out, I want to talk about my favorite song in this musical. It is the one that I listen to all the time and cry to. It is... Somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
If anyone lives in Toronto, you've definitely heard on the radio the ads for Come From Away and only that song.
Just like, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, this isn't, like we were saying, it's not a cast recording that you're just like, oh, I'm going to pick up my one song and put it on my playlist. But this is one that I do pick out on the cast recording. It's 38 Planes Reprise, Somewhere in the Middle of Nowhere. And it's when they're getting back on the planes to go home or to go back to wherever they were trying to go to in the first place.
Yeah.
And which wasn't necessarily home for people, but...
Wait, before you talk about this, that just reminded me of, like, a funny moment. I think it's, like, maybe in the middle, actually, of this song. The guy that plays the mayor, who... He's amazing, the guy that plays the mayor. But there's a moment when they're talking about that, you know, they might not be able to fly back to Dallas. They might have to take them to their departing... location of Paris, and they're like, let's vote.
Like, I want to go to Switzerland, and Beverly Bass is like, this is not a democracy.
No. But I'm pretty sure it's in the middle of them singing Somewhere in the Middle of Nowhere.
Probably. Like, it's like before they take off.
So
I love that song. It soars. It just soars. It like captures that emotion of like relief, of excitement, of happiness. These people who are like getting to go back to wherever they were trying to go in the first place and are in some cases really sad to leave that this place that has taken care of them for these past 5 days. Also when they pass on the hat to put together the scholarship fund, and then I cry, like we watched that
cried
earlier
today.
Cried for
the last 15 minutes of that show.
Oh, cried for 2 hours last night. That scholarship fund still provides scholarships today. What the plane people were trying to give back to the community, and the community was like, no, we just
want to thank you.
We would have done it for you. You would have done the same for us. It was like easy. It was no hard decision at all to do it for us. And the kind of thanking of the people of Gander and of Newfoundland. And I just, the way she says Texas is amazing.
There's no one else.
No one could sing Texas like that.
Yeah.
No, it's like Texas like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you look out your windows, you won't want to miss this. We just entered Texas.
It's just such a wonderful feel-good show. It takes kind of a dark moment in history and shows all the good that came from it. Shows the human beings who proved that one person's actions weren't reflective of the entire world, and that there were more good people than anything else.
Yeah. I feel like that is our full thoughts and feelings on Come From Away. As I said at the beginning of this episode, check Mervish's website because there is capacity changing. As of right now, there are no tickets on sale for Come From Away until the first week of January. I do think that that's because of them trying to rework their website. But Come From Away does not currently, unless I'm wrong, have an end date. So you can go see it.
It's an open-ended run.
Yeah. Also, if you're listening to us in New York, go see it on Broadway. If you're listening to us in the UK, go see it on the West End. If you're listening to us in Australia, go see it in, I think it's in Melbourne. And yeah, I think if it's coming to a city near you, like, this is a show that you need to see. It is a feel-good musical. And if you can't get to a show, it lives on Apple TV. That pro shot is phenomenal. We didn't even talk about that, but like, if you want to get in the nitty-gritty of like camera angles, this is a really good pro shot because there are only 12 people on stage. There's very minimal set, so cameras can really just like do their thing, and you get those like really amazing emotional close-up moments. I've never cried harder watching a musical like on TV, so I highly recommend it.
And this is a musical, if people are like, what should I see? What if I'm going to New York for the first time? I don't really watch musicals. What should I see? Or I'm in Toronto for a week. What should I do? This is the recommendation.
Totally.
Like, the Come From Away is the recommendation. There, I can't imagine someone not liking it or not getting something from it. So this is like the simplest recommendation to give.
100%. And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week.
Okay, I'm going to go first, as I always do. My obsession of the week. I don't want to, like, talk too much about it, because I think we'll talk about it another time.
The way that your obsession is obviously West Side Story.
Let me
live, Tara. The most predictable person I've ever met.
Let me live. Okay, so last week I got to see an early screening of West Side Story. It's out now. It's out everywhere.
Go watch it.
In theaters, you should watch it.
In theaters, it's only in theaters, so the only way to see it.
Yeah, you can't watch it anywhere else. So I got to see an early screening of it before, so I saw it before you and before any of our friends. I went with my mom, who absolutely loved the original movie. Me and her saw it on Broadway together back in 2010. So I knew she would be like a harsh critic. She loves that first movie. And so, like, I know this happens at screenings, but they took our cell phones before we went in. We were there for like 45 minutes waiting before the movie started. And so we're sitting in our seats going crazy because we have no cell phones and we're addicted. And the screen just had a giant poster of West Side Story on the screen. And they were just playing the like overture and the dance at the gym. Just on repeat. They played it like 10 times while we were in there.
The way I got a message from Steph being like, spotted every single person in this poster dancer-wise because I was staring at it for 45 minutes straight.
I was like, I recognize you. I know who you are. We were like, do you think that person likes that their head's cut off in this poster? like we went crazy. Anyway, my mom loved it. But my obsession is actually the finale end credits suite from the West Side Story soundtrack. I came home, I listened to the entire movie soundtrack. I think it's a great soundtrack. The orchestrations.
Oh my God.
But like, are gorgeous.
The West Side Amazing. Orchestrations, like, always are gorgeous. Yes. I feel like we had talked about this on our West Side episode because it was so interesting to see such a modernized version of the story, but keep those like brassy. I literally, like, I saw this like a few days after you. I'm not going to talk about my thoughts on this episode. You'll hear them on our year in review.
We're not going to talk about our thoughts that much.
But I will say, I was saying to my mom the other day, you know, like, we don't get a brass score like this anymore. Yeah. So to hear it again and so big, like they did on this movie, incredible.
To like speak to this, the last time we saw it on Broadway was the 2020, the ill-fated 2020 production. And I feel like the orchestrations of that were a little bit different. They made it a little like darker.
Yes. Still the same instruments, but agreed.
Yes. But like, it was almost like, I don't know anything about music, but it almost felt like everything was like in a more minor key or was like a little bit twisted in some way.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like, for the tone of that production, that worked. But these orchestrations, they just like took what was there and just made it bigger and better and more grand. So composer David Newman arranged and adapted Leonard Bernstein's original score. Leonard Bernstein did that. I just don't know what to say. Like, the dance at the gym has always been
one
of my favorite moments. So the orchestrations of that were amazing. And then Gustavo Dudamel conducted the New York Philharmonic during the recording sessions in 2019. And there were some additional recording sessions by the Los Angeles Philharmonic during the pandemic, actually. So shout out to David Newman, shout out to Gustavo, and shout out to the New York Philharmonic for creating this absolutely gorgeous end credits. It's like a 9-minute end credits suite of music that I could listen to on repeat for days. And my favorite little section is a little like dance at the gym section. They're like dun 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 dun. Best
Mambo.
Mambo.
That's
so that's my obsession. That end credits suite from the West Side Story soundtrack. We'll talk about this movie later. I can't get into it.
That's a whole episode. We're literally the way that we had said on our last episode, we are not doing a full episode on West Side Story. And the way that our year in review is going to be, we're not going to get into this right now either. A Diana 2.0 and a West Side Story episode. You're welcome. Yeah, that's our next episode. So just wait for our thoughts and feelings on all of that. Okay.
While we're talking about our year in review episode, we're going to take a little bit of some questions from listeners. So if you guys have any questions for us, you can email us at off2boapodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us or send us a message on Instagram, both at off2boapodcast. Tara's going to say her obsession now.
Okay, great. I feel like just like we saw each other yesterday, this is literally not going to be a surprise to you. I saw a Mervis show. On Friday, before I saw Come From Away. Now, I never publicly said this on the podcast, but I publicly said this to you, to other people, to my family. When I found out that Jesus Christ Superstar was part of the, well, I guess at the time it was the 2020-2021 season, right? That would be correct? No, 2019-2020?
No, it was always the 2020-2021 season.
Yeah. I was.
Like last year.
Meh to it. I thought the NBC, like John Legend, Jesus Christ Superstar, amazing. I thought it was so good. So I was like, okay, if it's going to be like somewhat like that, fine. Then when I found out that Jesus Christ Superstar was reopening the Mervish subscription this year, I was like, I am not about this. I don't want this. And then I saw it, guys. It's phenomenal. Like the way that I have checked the website to try and go again, like I am obsessed with this show. Now, much like you in this obsession, Andrew Lloyd Webber did that. This score is crazy. It's also like same kind of time period. Like the first iteration of Jesus Christ Superstar was probably like 1970 something. So these songs have lived on forever. It is one of his most interesting scores, I would say. It is a pop opera, but the talent in this tour cast, every single scene, everybody was one-upping each other vocally. The choreography, incredible. The set, incredible. The crucifixion, like everything. They played with glitter in this production. Like, I am obsessed with this version of the show. I never thought that I would ever say those words. Actually, shout out to my friend Chris, who saw this like a week prior to me. We always like talk about theater together at work, and he was like, do you have tickets for this? Because if you don't have tickets to this, you need to buy right now. He bought like full price, not even knowing what he was going to see. I'm like, that is a big move to buy a full price ticket. And thankfully, this production turned out to be what it is. So again, as I've said a few times now, the Mervish website is currently not selling tickets to Jesus Christ Superstar. I do think that it could change. If you are a subscriber and you have the option to either go to the show or like give your tickets back, go to the show because you need to go to the show. But the good news is that this is the North American tour. So this tour is going through, going across the states. Shout out to Tyrone Huntley, who stepped in at the last minute as Judas and literally gave everything in that performance. So obviously the song that I'm choosing to represent for Jesus Christ Superstar, unfortunately not sung by Tyrone, but it is sung by none other than Brandon Victor Dixon, is Superstar. Song. It is one of my favorite, I think, Andrew Lloyd Webber songs ever. It is just such a fun song. I sometimes like watching and listening to the score, I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I have no idea anything that's going on, but it's just so, so fun. Should we expose like the drama? Because I think it's kind of interesting to talk about the drama.
The fact that the person who was originally playing Judas in this tour was arrested for being a part of the January 6th insurrection. Yes, I'm obsessed.
The way that this man played Judas, I...
On brand.
Also, I like...
That so the investigators had to go see Jesus Christ Superstar twice before arresting him.
I read four times.
I read four times. I only read twice. Wow.
Because they needed to confirm that it was his face. I like this was literally 3 days before they like crossed the border to come to Toronto, and he would have been arrested at the border, I feel, if they didn't catch him before.
Well, I feel like they knew it was him. They were just waiting on their moment. I mean, obsessed. Like, don't quote me, but I believe the way that they found him was that he is also a Michael Jackson impersonator, and he was wearing his Michael Jackson jacket on January 6th. Yeah. And so they like matched it to pictures.
Amazing. It's like not funny. Terrible, not funny, no. But also like you couldn't place someone in a better character if you tried.
It's
this story wrote itself.
Sometimes real life is crazy. Like sometimes real life is actually crazy.
Anyway, Tyrone, who stepped in and playing Judas, is straight from the West End. This production did play in the West End. I think they were nominated for a couple of Oliviers, and then they performed it at Regent Park in London, outdoors in like 2020, I believe, like summer 2020, because that was the only way to do it socially distanced. I mean, like, talk about a well-oiled machine. Oh my God, it is fantastic. I cannot recommend this show more. As I said, I am like trying to see this again, and I'm upset that there's no tickets available at time of recording, because Mervish had put out a same day rush, $29 tickets, and to see that like masterpiece for $29 worth every penny. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was like a really exciting week back in the theater for me, and it made me so excited for, I know, again, we're in like kind of a weird period of time in the world and in the news, but I'm really excited for 2022 theater. We are getting some fun stuff here in Toronto. We are hoping to like road trip to a show maybe. And I mean, I'm dying to get back to New York at some point next year, so we'll see what happens. But there's a lot of good stuff happening like across the world right now in terms of like theater and musical theater. Obviously, like the year of movie musicals, so it's really exciting to have all of this stuff happen. And yeah, it felt like really good to get back into a theater again. You know, last show was summer, and to be back in the theater, like that I saw a show like 640 days later was kind of crazy. But
yeah.
I'll never forget that. So it was a really fun week of theater. And yeah, that wraps up our episode on Come From Away. That's also our obsessions. And as we said, our next episode is our last episode for the year. It is our year in review. We will be talking about our favorite moments, our favorite social media moments. We will be ranking all of the brand new movie musicals this year. So
the ones that we saw anyway.
Yes, exactly. And then, as I said, we will also be talking about the greatest musical of all time that came out in 2021, which was Diana. We'll be
eulogizing it.
Yeah, there will be a memorial as part of the episode because, sadly, actually, this episode being released on today, Monday, which is the 20th, Diana closed this last past night. Weekend. So we'll leave it at that. Our full thoughts will be in the next episode. Or, you know what, in between the two episodes, go listen to our Diana episode to get the full thoughts and feelings. And if you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can do that by subscribing to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. We would really appreciate it if you left us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also watch our podcast on YouTube, so don't forget to subscribe.
And like I said before, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BOA Podcast with the number 2. And we would love it if you guys sent us in a question for our year in review episode on whatever you want. We'll be answering some questions on that episode.
And we will see you guys next time for our final episode of the year.
Bye.